Are you enjoying this podcast? Well, you have KUOW members to thank for that. KUOW members make the trusted local journalism and storytelling you hear on this show possible. Become a member today and help support the production of this podcast. It only takes a minute. Make a donation at KUOW.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
And this is Soundside. I'm your host, Libby Denkman. Last week, when Seattle Mayor Bruce Harreld joined the show, he announced someone new would be joining his administration.
We're going to announce that Hamdi Mohamed, who was just elected as the Port of Seattle a commissioner, upcoming star, will be head of our Office in Immigrant Refugee Affairs. And so we're going to look at how we improve not only conditions of life for that particular community, but how we could establish bridges and linkages between those communities and everyone else.
All right. Harrell says she's an upcoming star, so naturally you may be wondering, who is Hamdi Mohamed? And since assisting immigrants and refugees is a matter of national and international politics, what power does the city of Seattle actually have to make an impact in this space? Here to answer some of those questions is Hamdi Mohamed herself. She was elected in November to the Port of Seattle Commission and is soon to be Director of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs for the City of Seattle. Commissioner, welcome to Soundside.
Thank you for having me.
So you are the first Somali woman elected to public office in Washington State, is that correct? In November, you joined your colleague Toshiko Hasegawa as the first women of color elected to the Port of Seattle Commission. So you're a barrier breaker. What does that mean for the Port Commission?
Yeah, it's been an incredible feeling, I've been saying, to become the first Somali American woman to be elected to office in Washington State, the first Black woman elected to the Port of Seattle Commission. And for the Port, I think this means it's just an ability to reach further into our global marketplace. I believe for us, for our region to participate in a competitive global marketplace at our highest capability, we must be represented by the full breadth of our community. And, I came to the U.S. as a refugee, and my story is the American dream. I'm, excited to be able to bring my lived and professional experience to the Port of Seattle in such a critical time for economic recovery. International trade and the exchange of goods between countries contribute to a robust global community, and we all have to be a part of that. And, I am a representation of that, and I think this is, it's a new day for the port that has been doing incredible work and adding to our whole state's economy, and it's adding more perspective and experience to the table. That's what it's bringing.
Mm-hmm. And you were just sworn in as a port commissioner. Will you keep both positions? Is that how it works? Like the port commission job, you can do that along with the job in the Harreld administration?
That is correct. I think currently every port commissioner has a full-time job, or the majority of us have a full-time job. It's similar to our state legislators who work part-time. You know, the state legislators meet in the Capitol only for a few months before they go back home to their district, and in many cases, their full-time work. And so it's very much similar to that. And so I will be wearing both hats.
As many of us do, the multiple hats. So your mother worked at SeaTac and your father was a truck driver. How does that family experience inform your work overseeing policy at the airport, shipping terminals, everything else that the port does?
Yeah, I grew up watching my mom juggle her job at SeaTac Airport to make ends meet. My mother would come home every night and share stories about walking through SeaTac Airport. She would share stories about her friends who were cabin cleaners, wheelchair pushers, baggage handlers. And to me, she would always describe a community, people from all walks of life who shared food, resources, joy, and even prayed together. And I believe today my work ethics and values are very much fueled by my mother's work experience, those stories that she shared about SeaTac airport workers, you know, like many families who are lower socioeconomic backgrounds. I felt like I often was living and learning between worlds, and King County truly has made me who I am today. And I've spent much of my professional life working to make King County a better place for everyone who is living here, including, you know, the city of Seattle. And I've dedicated my life to public service and advocating for small businesses and working families, both at the local and federal level. The experiences of everyday people really inform the decisions I make and the policies that I push for.
Yeah. On that note, Hamdi Muhammad, who's the incoming director of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs for the City of Seattle, we called you up to talk about that. But I just think that your role as an incoming Newport commissioner, that is fascinating as well because of your background. I think about the fight that the Port Commission of Seattle had for years over the SeaTac minimum wage. SeaTac was first to go to the $15 an hour minimum wage, and then there was this huge fight about whether that would apply to the airport, and the port played a role, I mean, all the way up to the state Supreme Court and kind of digging in its heels over that. You know, the commission looks really different today. Is that going to translate to which battles you pick?
You know, I was a strong supporter of the SeaTac $15 minimum wage, and am will always be an advocate for working people and working families and ensuring that, you know, they are protected. And my priorities as a commissioner includes addressing some of our supply chain crisis, which includes, you know, labor shortages in maritime and in the aviation industry. And you know, I am going to focus on creating pathways to permanent jobs and supporting workers and workers' rights. And so that's definitely the history of the $15 minimum wage is definitely going to inform my positions and will ensure that, you know, we support union jobs and workers, especially in this moment, this critical moment that we are in, where we are recovering from a pandemic. It's so important that we do that equitably and that we are protecting workers, that we're protecting the health of our community. Mm-hmm. And so that is definitely was what I talked about during the campaign trail. And I'm grateful that my vision around that resonated with the voters of King County and that I'm in this position today. And so I'm committed to that.
Yeah. So what is on your plate? What do you want to tackle first when you become director of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs?
You know, Immigrant and Refugee Affairs and that portfolio is one that I've carried for a very long time. I currently am a policy advisor for King County, and I'm going to remain in the policy advisor position for King County until the end of January, and then we'll transition. Once I start the new job, what I hope to do is, you know, host a number of listening sessions around the community to really hear what our community organizations are saying, our partners are saying, to inform my priority areas. And so I intend to do that for the first 60 days is hold listening sessions all across the city to help inform the priorities that I will be pushing in that office. And I'm really, really excited about it. I'm honored and humbled to have accepted the position and responsibilities and excited to work with Mayor Bruce Harreld and the City of Seattle. The mayor was one of the sponsors of the legislation that actually created the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. And in many of our discussions, he's expressed his continued commitment to protecting immigrants and refugees. And in fact, when I was in college and Congresswoman Jayapal was the director of One America at that time, I remember being a part of the discussions that she was also leading to establish this Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs with Mayor Harreld and other council members at the time. He was a council member at that time. So as, you know, someone who's came to the U.S. as a refugee, who's been a part of the foundation of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs, it gives me goosebumps to have this opportunity to lead that office and improve the lives of immigrants and refugee residents and workers in the city of Seattle and in King County. And I also want to just give a shout out to the current director of the office, Ku Vu. She's done an incredible job to improve the lives of Seattle immigrants and refugees and improving the city's program and services to meet their needs. And so I'm looking forward to building on that legacy, helping make sure that that office is working in coordination with other offices of immigrant and refugees throughout our government, right? Our state offices.
Yeah. And when
county,
you talk about, you know, working throughout our government, I think one of the big challenges, right, for local officials is that Congress doesn't act on immigration. The system in many ways is broken, and local governments are at, you know, kind of the trickle down effect, the bottom of this chain of dealing with, you know, protecting their communities and making sure that, you know, immigrants and refugees in the city are feel safe and can be productive. I mean, what power does a city have in the face of this federal immigration system that in so many ways is problematic and broken?
That's right. You know, you said that really well. I mean, it's frustrating what's happening on the federal level. And while immigration policy is largely within the jurisdiction of the federal government, there are many actions that our, you know, our cities, counties, and states can take to remain welcoming regions. And so many of our local governments and faith groups and nonprofit organizations have been the first responders to our broken immigration system, and that has been for decades. And really, there are, out of the county, for instance, I have led King County's immigrant and refugee portfolio, and what that has meant is implementing King County's immigrant and refugee ordinance, which was put in place to protect immigrants and refugees to ensure that they can access our healthcare system at the county, that they can, you know, be on the bus and not have to be worried about being asked about their immigration status. And I spearheaded a countywide immigrant and refugee ordinance training developed the training for over 15,000 county employees, where they are understanding what those the differences between our federal, state, and county laws, right? That at the county level, we don't have to ask people for their citizenship status. And we know that when we don't ask those kind of questions, it when crimes happen against people, they are able to report those crimes, right? They are able to receive services that we are providing at the county and city levels. And so there are a lot that that can be done at the city and county levels to ensure that immigrants and refugees are being protected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to make sure that our local governments are coordinating with each other really well to make sure that those services are reaching our communities. And that is a huge thing that I want to tackle at, in my new role.
Yeah, one of the services that King County and Seattle collaborate on is the Legal Defense Fund for immigrants who are facing deportation. Of course, we know it's not enough. Many people go through immigration courts without an attorney. Is there room to improve this service, maybe expand it, more funding for lawyers, for folks who are facing this situation?
Absolutely. I work very closely with the Northwest Immigrants Rights Project, Jorge Barone, and have been part of the discussions to help stand up that fund. And so I think there is a lot of opportunity to add more funding there and, you know, and to coordinate our funding between the state, county, and cities. And so making sure that we have stronger regional partnerships to support immigrant and refugee residents and workers is a top priority. And there's a lot of room for improvement, and I'm excited about the opportunity to add to that.
Well, speaking of Jorge Barone, we are going to speak with him in just a minute here. And I, you know you got to go, so we're going to just have one more question for you. Hamdi Mohammed, who's a Port of Seattle commissioner, joins me right now. She's soon to be the director of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs. You went a little viral recently with your experience with COVID-19. You had tested positive earlier in the month, but that was after you had had a difficult time going to a doctor and getting told that it was just a migraine. you know, Black Americans, as you know, as you talked about on your Twitter thread, often face medical discrimination. They're systematically undertreated for pain. How did that make you feel to be experiencing something which you said in your Twitter thread felt like it was part of that systematic, you know, misinterpretation or underdiagnosis?
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, it's the same case for Black immigrants, right? When you're living in these multiple identities, you know, often I've said, like, Black immigrants are often missing in discussions when it comes to policy, when it comes to decision processes. And it's a reality, right? Like, we have to do better. And I had that firsthand experience. And, you know, I shared story to encourage others to advocate for themselves and to be tested so that they can protect their communities. And also, you know, sharing that story to say, like, our healthcare system is broken and there's a lot of room for improvement. You know, of course, I'm really grateful for the medical professionals who have been working around the clock to ensure that all of our communities are protected. That said, we also can't deny that these stories exist and that it's real, and that, you know, our experiences as Black people, as people of color, is often different when we are, you know, going through our healthcare system or the criminal justice system, our education system. And so we have to be mindful of that and make improvements where we can.
Yeah. Hamdi Mohammed is Port of Seattle Commissioner and the incoming Director of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs in Seattle. Thank you very much for being on Soundside.
Thank you.
And with us now is Jorge Barone. We just talked about a little bit, previewed that we were going to speak with him, Executive Director of the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. So our conversation with Hamdi, we touched on immigration policy in the city, Jorge. But what is your reaction to, you know, the changing of the guard at the city level and the powers that the city of Seattle really has to affect the lives of immigrants and refugees in this community?
Yes, thank you for having me on. Well, I think we're, you know, we're excited to work with, you know, Hamdi, now commissioner and soon to be director of Mohammed and at the city of Seattle. I think I should note, and I echo her comments about the great work that the outgoing director, Kugu, has done in the past few years, especially during the period of the Trump administration. But there is a lot of work to do, and I think Hamdi brings a great deal of experience and, of course, her own lived experience to this role that we're excited to work with her on. There is a lot that the city and local governments generally can do with regard to supporting immigrant refugee communities. You know, you brought up the inaction at the federal level, and that's certainly the case. But I think one of the things that we've seen over the last few years has been that there's been renewed, you know, interest and recognition of the role that local jurisdictions can play in trying to remove some of the obstacles that often make it more difficult for immigrant refugee community members to be able to access opportunities and jobs and the you know the things that they need to be able to lead a thriving life. So I think we're excited to work with her on the work that the city can do, and I think she's going to be a person who brings the right experience, especially her work in other local governments, that will also help us have a more integrated regional approach to some of these issues.
Mm-hmm. I think many people may be clued into bigger trends in immigration policy. The plight of Afghan refugees, for example, or asylum seekers who have to stay in border camps because of the Remain in Mexico policy that's still underway under the Biden administration. What are the issues that can fly under the radar here in the Northwest?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. And one of the things that we've talked a lot too is that when folks talk about immigrant refugee communities, they think there's the kind of the same issue, and there's actually such a large sway of issues that are affecting community members. And oftentimes things kind of fade from the headlines. So, you know, we're talking about the Afghan community members and those folks who were getting a lot of attention a few months ago. They're integrating to our communities now, but one of the things that's happened for them, for example, is that Congress hasn't passed any legislation that would provide him a pathway to be able to remain here permanently. So they come in on temporary status, and most people would be surprised after all the effort to evacuate community members that they're not getting an easier path. They're going to have to apply for permanent protections. And so there's a lot of work that is ramping up locally to be able to help that community. We have, you know, new arrivals, folks here locally who are seeking asylum in our region, who are being put through an expedited asylum process that the Biden administration has implemented, which we were opposed to because we're concerned that that would mean people would have less access to legal representation. Mm-hmm. And the data from the first few months shows that that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, so the American Bar Association just put out a call for pro bono attorneys because this dedicated docket that you just mentioned ends up meaning that people are rushed through the system with no legal representation, right?
That's exactly right. And it's frustrating because, you know, they are being provided, you know, kind of an opportunity to present their cases, but not a meaningful opportunity, right? Because if they don't have legal representation, the data shows that they are, you know, basically unable to be able to present their case, given how complicated the asylum process is. And so that's one of the things that we had asked the administration to stop. Unfortunately, they did not listen. And this is an example of where, in some cases, local jurisdictions will have to step in to provide support in areas where unfortunately the federal government is not doing what it should do.
Mm-hmm. We just have about 2 minutes left here. I know this is a big topic, so stay with me. Jorge Barone with the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. Your organization recently argued before the Supreme Court about whether immigrants who have been deported and then returned to the U.S. Illegally, whether they could be detained indefinitely. Can you fill us in on the background for this case? I understand it started with a class action lawsuit for clients in the Seattle area. And then, you know, what's next? When are we expecting to see movement on this?
Yeah, so we are, proud to be able to represent our clients at you know, the highest tribunal in the land. But we are actually in some ways frustrated that we had to go to that level because this involved the federal government appealing a decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in favor of our clients and community members who are detained, including here locally. But obviously, this case will affect the situation nationally. And so these are folks actually who did return after they were deported, but that was because they were afraid of persecution in their home countries. And they are detained. And what the courts locally said was that after they were detained already kind of an extended period of time, 6 months, that they should be provided an opportunity to go before a judge and ask for release from detention. Just the opportunity to go before a judge, right? Which after 6 months seems like a very, very minimal type of protection.
Seems reasonable.
Unfortunately, the federal... right. And so the federal government is saying that's still too much. It should just be entirely up to ICE whether they keep those people detained essentially indefinitely. And so we're profoundly disappointed that the Biden administration is taking that position in this case, arguing that people should be indefinitely detained in this situation. But that's what they're arguing. And we have raised the arguments before the court on why we think that is completely a violation of our basic standards of due process. You know, we're expecting a decision in June. And, you know, frankly, you know, we know the court has been, you know, siding with the government in a lot of these cases. But we're hopeful that they will see how unreasonable the position of the Biden administration is in this particular situation.
Yeah, huge implications for that. Somebody who can be detained indefinitely without even a hearing. Jorge Barone is the executive director of the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. Thank you very much for joining us here on Soundside.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for Soundside today. Our show was produced by Brandy Fullwood and Sarah Leibovitz. Alec Cowan and Noel Gaska are also producers for Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Soundside will be back tomorrow.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's Teen Dance Ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.